Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and this interview was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For the latest news and terms and conditions, go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, my name's Chris Scott, and I'm here with Jeremy Rocket from Gonzales Baez. How are you, Jeremy?
Yeah, good, thanks.
Excellent. What we're going to talk about today is a wee bit about sherry. I understand you guys are big sherry producers.
We're one of the biggest, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Brands that you may have heard about is Teo Pepe.
Teo Pepe, yeah.
Yeah, nice Fino sherry. I like your Teo Pepe Fino. But we're going to talk a wee bit about Gonzales first of all, and then we may get into some of the different sherry styles, hopefully if we've got time. So, but how long has Gonzales been operating for?
Well, Gonzales Baez has been around since 1835.
Should I call it Gonzales Baez?
Gonzales Baez, yeah.
Is that the proper name?
Yeah, the proper name. Okay. Bit of a mouthful. We've been around since 1835, and we're still a family company. So the great-great-grandchildren of the founder are running the company now, 176 years later. And incidentally, this year is the 200th anniversary of the guy that started the company.
Oh, okay.
He was born 200 years ago on the 26th of May.
Oh, very nice. Are you going to have a wee celebration?
I guess we might have a few glasses, yeah.
Break out a glass. You haven't got any wine from this first vintage or anything?
There is some wine from... the oldest I've tasted is from 1853. Which was made for the Pope, one of the Pope Piuses. And it's still drinkable and it's pretty fantastic, yeah.
And you're just a bit of yourself, you're the marketing director
of Gonzales. Yeah.
Is that in the UK?
In the UK only.
Okay, so you cover all the UK. And we're here in a sherry bar.
We're in Bar Pepito, yeah.
Yeah, Bar Pepito. It's not quite open yet. Hopefully we won't get too many patrons coming through annoying us while we're recording. Gonzales Baez and Bar Pepito, you've got a bit of a relationship going on.
Yeah, we worked with Richard Big from Camino to help him set the bar up. We took the staff over to Spain, over to Jerez, to train them. In fact, it wasn't so much training them, just showing them how the Spanish do sherry and tapas. We helped with a lot of the decor in here that you can see around. The tabletops are the ends of our barrels. A lot of the stuff you see around here has come from our winery. But it was really about helping them create a little piece of Jerez in London.
Okay.
That was the whole target.
Is there any other sherry bars in London?
There are many, many sherry bars now. This was the first,
is there?
Really, yeah.
Oh, okay. So he's being so out of touch.
Oh, no. So you have a great, great chef called Jose Pizarro. He's got a sherry bar called Jose down in Bermondsey Street. There's Capote y Toros down in South Kensington. There's Morito next door tomorrow in Exmouth Market in Farringdon. Barrafina in Soho. Copita down in Soho. Barica. Which is in that's in Fitzrovia. The list goes on, but there are some great, great tapas bars now in London.
Yeah, tapas I know about, but sherry,
well,
per se.
Yeah, I guess these guys they're not calling themselves necessarily sherry bars. Some of them are, but they feature sherry quite heavily and quite unashamedly.
Okay.
Which is a great thing.
Fair enough. And this is quite a tight wee bar, but you've got a nice wee courtyard. So I imagine in summer people are just sort of coming in, piling
in and out. Yeah. It's always busy in here.
Yeah.
Two, three people makes it busy.
Yeah.
And you can't book. We reckon 20 people and it's pretty rammed in here. People sometimes just can't get in. But it's got a buzz around it. When it's full, when it's half full, there's a real buzz around it. The music's always Spanish. It just feels like a little piece of Spain.
You mentioned you rattled off loads of tapas bars / sherry bars. Do you feel there's a move more towards that style of cuisine and also food, or do you think that sherry itself needs food to really set it off?
I think sherry definitely needs food to set it off, and I think what's happened over the last since our offshoot of Gonzales Baez in the UK has been operating as an independent company in the last sort of 7 or 8 years, I think the context has changed within the UK. So there's been a massive increase in Spanish gastronomy, great Spanish chefs coming over, and great Spaniophile English chefs opening great Spanish restaurants and tapas bars. So I think there's definitely a much more interest in Spain. At the same time, I think there has been in the last 2-3 years an increase in tapas bars, and I think that's about a style of eating, much more relaxed, much more informal, and they don't necessarily have to be massively Spanish. I think there's people like sharing plates and that kind of thing, eating standing up,
the
whole grazing thing. So I think that's helped, and all that sets a context for sherry as a drink, which is most certainly a food drink. And I would say I can't think of when I would drink sherry without a little nibble of something.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's fine. I quite like Finos. I'm not into the sweeter styles, but I like Fino, and I always find a bit of salty nuts or something just
doesn't matter. Yeah,
off.
Cold roast spud from yesterday. A bit of sausage.
Yeah,
whatever. Definitely. Yeah, fridge tapas we call it.
Okay, let's talk about Gonzalez Bias. You said you're a 200-year-old company, or close really, to coming up to 200 years anyway, or certain thereabouts. Are you? Where do you see yourself as a specialty? Is it sherries, or is it Spanish wines, or?
It depends whether you look globally or in the UK. I mean, globally, we are a wine company that sells about a third wine, a third spirits, and a third specifically sherry. But in the UK, we're very much a wine and sherry company. We don't sell many spirits, but we do sell Spanish brandy. Mm-hmm. But we're very much a wine company. And to us, sherry is a wine. You know, I think a lot of people see it as a fortified wine, which is almost a separate thing. But for us, it's a wine.
Yeah.
It's a type of wine. So we're a wine company.
It's got the same alcohol as a Californian wine these days.
Yeah. I mean, Tio Pepe is 15% alcohol. But we also have a great Rioja. We have great Cava. We have other wines from Spain. So, and our UK company, we also distribute other people's wine too. We're a Jackson Estate, Noval Port.
Okay, yeah.
So we're a broader company than the name might suggest.
Well, let's have a look at some of these sherries, and we're going to taste what? How many? Four or five sherries?
As many as you'd like to try.
Well, there'll be all of them then.
Yeah. The first one we're going to try is Tio Pepe.
Fino?
It's an absolute classic Fino sherry.
Yeah, it won the gold medal, trophy medal at IWC a few years ago. I remember buying a half bottle.
It's won about 8 or 9 times, I think.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised. It's normally quite nice.
Yeah. So this is a Fino, so it's very, very pale. It ages for about 4.5 years under a layer of yeast, which we call flor, mm-hmm. which translates to flour. What that yeast does is, as well as protecting it from the oxygen, so keeping it pale, it also adds a kind of yeasty aroma to it.
Yep.
And the yeast also eats up all the sugar that might be left after the fermentation, which is, I mean, it starts life as a dry wine, but it ends up as an incredibly dry wine.
What's the general process of making a Fino?
Well, you start with a wine from the Palomino grape, and that process.
Do you just normal make a white wine, Palomino done?
Yeah, I mean, I could talk to you about some of the details, but you're not looking for particularly good wine. I mean, there's a saying in the wine industry that wine is made in the vineyards. There's a saying in the sherry industry that the sherry is made in the winery. What we start off with is a fairly bland. It's not uninteresting, but it's relatively uninteresting white wine. And we let, once that's fortified to 15% alcohol, we let the yeast from the fermentation float to the surface, and it starts to grow and form a skin on top of the barrel. Those barrels are then sort of blended through the Solera system, so that it's a completely homogeneous product at the end. It takes away any vintage variation. But you end up, after 4.5 years, with a wine that is incredibly dry, because the yeast has eaten up any sugar in the wine. It's also eaten up glycerol, not a thing we talk about a lot in wine, but glycerol is a slightly sweet, viscous liquid.
Yeah, it gives unctuous. Viognier's high in glycerol.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing about Fino is, as well as being incredibly dry, it has no glycerol. So there's almost no compromise with it. It's a very uncompromising drink.
Okay.
And the smell is actually technically acetaldehyde, which the yeast produces.
Doesn't smell like sort of... I always think acetaldehyde is more of a... aerific smell or nail varnish.
Yeah.
But that doesn't smell like that. It smells more nutty to me.
No, it's it is more nutty, yeah. Yeah. I think you're probably thinking of acetic products, whereas acid, like acetic acid and
Right.
But this is acetaldehyde is a fault in normal wine, but it's normal in Fino. And that's what gives it that kind of pungent aroma on the nose. Mm. And then it is uncompromisingly dry on the palate. And, you know, even my first sip is always sort of, oh, that's...
Dry.
Yeah, dry. That's
but light. Yeah. Light for a 15.5%.
It is light. And I think the thing about Fino is that it's probably one of the only wines we drink that's savoury.
Yeah.
There's no fruit character there.
Yeah.
So there might be a bit of citrus, there might be a bit of nut, but there's no fruit character. And that's what makes it such a good food wine.
I always think, because it lives under flour, and I don't know if this is true, but I know things like champagne, they have high levels of umami in them.
Yeah.
Because it's, normally you find...
Because the autolysis.
Yeah, the autolysis. But anything that spends a lot of time in contact with yeast or an organic process will develop umami. And I know that Fino, because I like Fino, it's the only sherry I really, really like.
Yeah.
I always find if I have it with salty nuts, it goes beautifully. Yeah, and the salt just lifts the sherry, and that's sort of what you expect,
and
salt
vice versa,
and umami.
We did some experiments with a guy from King's College a few years ago who did some experiments with Tio Pepe and looked at several things. One is that it causes you to salivate in the same way that lemon juice does, but doesn't leave you with a lemony flavour. And saliva cleans your taste buds. Mm. It actually washes the sort of debris from your tongue. So it does prepare food or prepare your tongue for food. But it does slightly suppress salt and sour flavours. So that would explain why it's a great drink with salty snacks or with even sour things like vinegary things like boccheroni's, like anchovies and vinegar. Yeah, because what it does is it washes those flavours away and therefore slightly reduces the intensity and therefore makes them easier to eat.
But do you think it's got umami in it?
Well, there's a huge debate. There are no glutamates, and because a lot of the glutamates come from amino acids, and the yeast eats the amino acids and proteins and other things as well as glycerol and sugar. Oh. So I don't believe, and I think the research that has been done says it doesn't have umami producing flavors in it, which would be glutamates. It does go well with umami rich food, though. Extremely well with umami rich food. But I think I would say that things that are difficult to match, like artichokes, make red wine taste metallic. They go well with pheno. Sour foods, acidic foods like anchovies in vinegar, that's quite difficult to match with wine. It goes well with pheno, and pheno is instantly incredibly low in acidity compared to a lot of white wines. Smoked salmon, things like that. So it might not always be the best match to a food, but it's an incredibly versatile match to an awful lot of foods.
Yeah.
It does go well with umami-rich foods. But my own belief is that it doesn't have umami compounds in it. Other people say it does. I think all the research that's been done said it doesn't.
Oh, okay. Well, there's me getting quite wrong, because I look at it and I look at the foods it goes with, and they're the foods that umami go well with.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, and it lives under floor, so therefore it must have. But you're saying that, what was the thing, just so I can understand it properly?
Well, my understanding is that umami it comes from glutamate compounds, and not just monosodium glutamate, but others.
Yeah, yeah.
And they predominantly come from amino acids. Which are present in meat, for example. And I know that certainly flour consumes amino acids and proteins within the wine, so it's relatively low in glutamate compounds. So I think it's a good match, but it's not a glutamate.
That's really disappointing, because...
No, I don't think it is, because I think it still goes well.
No, it is for me, though, because I've always had this view of umami and flour and that, and it's just... You've upset me now.
Well, I could be completely wrong, because
it sounds like you got the research.
Well, yeah, but I'm sort of remembering research that was done a few years ago. I think the debate's still out there.
We're going to run out of time here, but so I wanted just to explore a wee bit about how pheno sherry is made.
Yep.
You said the Palomino grape variety. I understand that some of the soils that are appropriate for pheno sherries, it's the chalk that's important as opposed to the other one. So do you want to just give us a wee bit about how they select the grapes for pheno versus Oloroso?
It's the same grape, pheno and Oloroso. It's all Palomino pheno grape. The soil is Albarutha soil, which is about 60% chalk. From the Jerez Superior area. And in fact, as the sherry area has got slightly smaller over the years, the quality's gone up because you obviously dig up vineyards in the poorer soil areas. Really, the big advantage of that chalk is that it's a poor soil, so the vines go, the roots go down a long way looking for nutrients
and water.
Well, that's the other point, which is that water. You think that Jerez is a dry area. The average rainfall in Jerez is 600 millimeters a year. The average rainfall in London is 585 millimeters a year. So actually, it's drier in London. But what we get here is kind of that drizzly rain that rains for about 363 days of the year, and then we get a couple of days of sunshine. Whereas in Jerez, you get something like 363 days of sunshine and a couple of days, perhaps a bit more. It will absolutely tip down with rain. And so what you have to do in the vineyards is you have to dig little shallow trenches just to catch the rain and let it soak into the soil. But normally, if you just dig down, say, 10 centimetres, you'll find humidity in the soil. Because the other thing is, in the summer, when the sun comes out, it bakes the surface so much that the water can't evaporate from deeper down in the soil.
Okay.
So back in, I think it was the late 90s, of something like 7 years of drought, and it didn't affect the sherry harvest at all, because somewhere underneath was humidity.
Nice thing about chalk is it's got high porosity and permeability.
Yeah.
And the porosity means that it holds water.
It holds water, so, yeah. Yeah, it's like a sponge.
Yeah, except for it seems dry, but it's actually full of moisture, which is
so we might think of the southwest of Spain as being a dry area, but in terms of technically it's as wet as London, or as dry as London, but what we're doing is we're catching all that water soaking it into the soil, and the vines can find it for the rest of the year or the year after or the year after.
And so they get the grapes in. I understand there's a sorting process of different wines to decide which is the quality and which is not.
Well, you know, I think in the past we talk about, you know, things like God playing with the wine, deciding if it's going to be a Fino or Oloroso. But we do know that certain vineyards, due to their attitude towards the sun and the wind and so on and so forth, will perhaps be a better grape for Fino or for Oloroso. So it's fairly predetermined when the grapes are harvested which grapes are going to go for Finos and Olorosos, and therefore they're treated in separate ways, you know, once they get to the winery. So the Finos might be fermented at a slightly lower temperature. Certainly you use the free-run juice for a Fino. So with a Fino, you're always looking for delicacy and a very fine, elegant must or juice to start with, and then must to produce a Fino sherry. Whereas with an Oloroso, you're looking for a slightly coarser, heavier must.
One with a bit of guts. Yeah. What's the difference between Fino and Manzanilla? People talk about saltiness in the
geography.
Wine, but is it just geography?
Yeah. So it's about 30 kilometres. Manzanilla is what we call a Fino that comes from San Luca de Barrameda. And there is a difference in the style of the wine because San Luca is right on the Mediterranean coast. Sorry, on the Atlantic coast. Where am I? It's right on the Atlantic coast. And that means that the floor growth is slightly different. Floor in Jerez tends to die off in the winter and the summer due to the colder winter and the warmer summer. Whereas in San Luca, because it's right by the sea, you get a more moderated climate. So you get a thicker floor growth year round. And that just causes a different style of wine. It's lighter. It's a bit more zingy, I suppose. I mean, there's no sodium chloride if you want to talk about salt.
Yeah, I remember people taste salt. And I've tasted the Manzanillas.
Yeah.
Doesn't really taste the salt to me.
I think what I get on Manzanilla is a tingle on the lips, which is very similar to the tingle you get on the lips from salt. So I think it's that zingy tingle that you get that is reminiscent of salt. But there's no sodium chloride in the wine. There's no kind of sea influence on the actual liquid. What it is it's the climatic influence on the floor, which is slightly different to Jerez. I mean, incidentally, all the wineries in Jerez are on the west side of town. So they catch the breeze that comes off the Atlantic. So you're looking to try and, you know, keep the wineries cool. But obviously in San Luca, they're that much cooler because they're much nearer the coast.
Okay, now that makes sense. So the other big thing about sherries is that you talked about sherry or Fino sherry being made in the winery, and they use a concept called a Solera system.
Yep.
I'm sure some of the listeners know about Solera, but not everybody does.
Yep.
Do you want to just give us an overview of what a Solera is?
Yeah, I mean,
and just on that, we ask people in our tastings what a Solera is one of our quiz questions.
Nobody knows.
Right. Okay. No one knows.
This is interesting without a diagram to show people. I think if the best way to imagine it is three barrels, one stacked on top of the other. We're going to bottle some Fino now to ship over to the UK to have in one of these nice sherry bars, and we take around a third of the wine from the bottom barrel. And that wine is taken away and it's stabilized and bottled and sent over here. And then what we do is we take a third from the barrel above, which is approximately a year younger, and we put that in the bottom barrel. And within about 3 months, because there's a smaller quantity of the wine in the barrel takes on the character of the old wine. Now the barrel in the middle has got a third less in it, so we take a third from the barrel at the top, which is about a year younger, and we put that into the barrel in the middle, and that in 3 months takes on the character of the old wine. Now we've got a bit of a gap in the top barrel, so we take some new wine, añada or vintage wine of the year that we've just made, and we put that into the top barrel. Simplistically, that's how it works. But of course, you haven't got three barrels stacked on top of each other. What you've got is rows of barrels stacked on top of each other. And in fact, we have, I think, in Tio Pepe, something like 33,000 barrels in our Solera.
Oh, really? Is it three rows deep?
Yeah, it's very, very wide, though. No, it's actually the thing is when you see in wineries the barrels stacked on top of each other, it doesn't quite work like that in practice because the barrels at the top are warmer by a couple of degrees because of the temperature difference between the floor and the higher barrels. So you put different products in the higher barrels. But it's always easier to imagine them stacked up on top of each other and flowing down. But of course, what you do is you take from one row, you would take the third of the wine from each barrel. You would blend that together and then you would put that in the bottom row.
Yeah. So
you're mixing everything up.
So you're not only you're mixing vertically through the years, but you're also mixing horizontally through there.
Yeah. And what you get is, a very homogenized product, which means you can increase or decrease your production within reason, relatively easily. It means the wine stays in the solera until you need to bottle it, so it stays fresh.
And it's under floor, and most yeast is oxygen absorbing.
Yes.
So it keeps it fresh.
Completely fresh. Yeah. Absolutely. And also, what you do is you're blending many, many years, and the longer you run the system, the more years you have. So, I think it was Milton Friedman that works out that Tia Pepe has something like 56 different vintages in one glass, certainly between 50 and 60. So you might have a molecule from 60 years ago, but you've got a blend of many, many years, which creates a lot of complexity as well as a lot of consistency within the product.
I think we're going to wrap it up there now, Jeremy. Thank you very much for your time.